Monday evening to everybody. This is your Monday Night Kickoff Show. I'm your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. I have a bunch of cool things to get to here shortly. First, I'd like to welcome everybody to the show. I appreciate you guys tuning in, even with the Jets playing the Dolphins tonight. I don't foresee that being much of a game. Go Jets. I don't even like professional football anymore, but I'll root for the Jets since the Dolphins are sucking so bad. I got Mark on the phone and I got Rob on the phone. How are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Good.
Doing great. How's everyone doing?
Good, good.
All right.
Just getting ready to hunker down again, it would seem, for another round of heavy rains. It looks like we're going to have tomorrow. I think, Rob, looks like you guys are going to get pretty good washing.
Yeah, it's supposed to. It was supposed to be tonight, but they're saying it's moving slower than expected, so, whatever.
Hmm. Bring it on. I want more rain. The water's starting to slow down in my ditches, and I can't have that. So
put your raincoat on, and, there you go. You'll be fine.
There you go. I got Mr. Greg Becker on the phone as well.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Much better than I was this morning. Thanks for asking.
Oh, yeah. I saw that you were having a bit of a bout with some sort of a bug. I hope you're feeling much better.
Yeah, round two wasn't as bad as round one last Friday, but hopefully it's so to speak, it's all behind me now.
There you go. Wait. Hold on. What I got going on here? Okay, anyway. Tonight's show is brought to you, as always, by the unofficial beer sponsor of Kayak Fishing Radio, Monday Night Edition. That is Key West Southernmost Wheat, brought to you by the fine people at Florida Beer Company. There you go, little plug. News, I've got some news. Maybe.
Some very loud news.
That just means it's important. I have officially joined Jackson Kayak Company as a fishing team member. So no longer am I working with the fine folks up at Emotion Kayaks. I am now loyal to the fine people at Jackson. I appreciate those guys giving me an opportunity. And that's all I have to say about that for now. Also, too, a couple things to get to real quick. We got a Fish Skins tournament again. Last week I had some of the guys from Fish Skins listening in the show, and Anthony called in. Fish Skins Redfish tournament is November the 11th and 12th. The captain's meeting is the 11th. The actual tournament is the 12th. It is for the heaviest slot size redfish brought in alive. So I know it's kind of tricky, but that's how you do it. Heaviest redfish brought in alive. Last year, I believe it was all 27-inch fish that pretty much took the top few spots. So, I don't think any 26 and 26 and 3/4 and that kind of thing made it. But was going to say, should be a good turnout. We had a real good crowd last year. And there's a few guys that competed in it in kayaks and canoes and guys that fished on the bank and stuff. So as long as the fish comes to the scales alive, you're good. There's going to be a spot division as well if anybody wants to get involved in the tournament. It's $10 extra entry for the spot division. Whoever brings in a fish alive with the most spots, a slot-sized fish with the most spots, wins all the money. So it's going to be a $10 pot, basically like Calcutta. For more information on the Fish Skins Redfish Tournament, you can call 321-750-7545 or go to fishskins.com. That's skins with a Z.com. So it should be a good event. I know Exude has really stepped up and has come in through with a whole lot of prizes, plastics for folks. So I'm not really going to get into all the prizes and stuff, but it'll be a good event. So if anybody's down this way, then, check it out. Should be a lot of fun. What else do I have to get to real quick? Oh, real quick. last week I didn't mention my buddy Kyle Kasiba, and he got all upset about it, and I thought he was going to cry, and I needed to go ahead and tell everybody that Kyle was fishing with me last week, and we caught little tarpons, and there you go, Kyle. Hope you feel better, buddy. But let's see. So this past weekend, before, after, during work, all I could think about was fly fishing ditches and the likes of, until one of my really good friends came into the shop and told me about the 5-pound Spanish mackerel they've been catching just outside of Port Canaveral. So tonight we're going to be talking about 5-pound Spanish mackerels and how to catch them. And if you don't like to eat them or if you've never tried them, we'll kind of get some tips from some of our experts I know who have caught them and probably devoured them. Yeah, so let's start off with Mark. Mark, do you guys get any Spanish mackerel up your way?
Oh, yeah. We have a nice little Spanish mackerel run, I guess you'd say, starting in May. And then it runs till just about August or September. You can catch them. And, you know, 95% of the boaters troll for them with Clark spoons and throw gotcha plugs into schools and stuff like that. The past couple years, I'm going to say the past 2 years, we haven't had a mega, you know, mackerel run. What I mean by that is, you know, just have a Spanish mackerel everywhere. You know, they're really few and far between, but when you do get into them, we're talking like 20, 25-inch Spanish mackerel, just big, big, big ones.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a plus side, but it also has me worried about, you know, the stock and how, you know, the northern stock and how it's doing. But, you know, gotcha plugs, Clark spoons, you know, I throw crocodiles and butterfish tins at them, you know, because that, you know, 1 ounce, 1.5 ounce butterfish tin, I can crank that thing as fast as I can, and it's not going to come to the surface. So, and then that seems to be my key to success. But everyone likes to throw gotcha plugs, white with red head, white with green head, pink with, you know, special coloring, or all the gotcha plug colors, and then gold Clark spoons.
Sweet. And are you like me? Do you like to eat Spanish mackerel, or is it mainly just a game fish for you?
Oh, I love Spanish mackerel. I do a ceviche with them.
Ah, nice. So there you go. That's our first Spanish mackerel cooking tip. Kind of not even cooking tip. On yeah, I'll tell you what, man. The first time that I ever tried Spanish mackerel, I was impressed. After always hearing people say they're oily and they're gross, they're mackerel, blah 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 blah. You know, you can boil them and you know, fry them. They're not too bad or whatever. But I'll tell you what, it turned into one of my favorite eating fish, especially eating them fresh. And I will try and get my limit on those guys. Usually, I'm pretty conservative about how many fish I take. I take just enough for a meal or two, but not with Spanish mackerel. I'll get fat on the couch eating Spanish mackerel for days on end. I like them so much. For those of you that don't know, Mark is from the Virginia Beach area. So he fishes the Chesapeake and all that kind of thing. He's also our host of our Wednesday night show at 8 o'clock Eastern, Landing Crew. But Rob,
yeah.
Tell me a Spanish mackerel story, buddy.
Well, a good place to go after them around here, usually they show up around July, middle of July, end of July. And down near the Skyway Bridge is a great place, right at the mouth of Tampa Bay. It's a great place to find them. Typically, you can go after those with, if you got Spanish sardines or something like that, you just throw those under a bobber and it won't be long. And those things, I tell you what, they gash some serious. I mean, you'll be sitting there, you know, floating a sardine under a cork and it's like all of a sudden that cork just like takes off, like seriously fast. I mean, those things are some serious slashing and fast moving fish. So that's another on the spoon side. I like a silver Sprite, or you know, about 1/4 ounce, or a Meps small silver spoon, about I think it's 1/8 ounce, with a little treble hook on the back, and it's, you know, as fast as you can reel that thing, the better. So that's usually the tactics. You can catch them in the mouths of passes, inlets, things of that nature around here. Other than that, though, I don't know. I don't know if it's – maybe it's just an East Coast thing. But I think the Spanish have kind of – on this coast have kind of come and gone.
Oh, you've already seen them? You've already had your run and now they're already gone?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen them for a while, but, you know, I haven't really been out looking for them either.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's about all I know about Spanish. As far as, like, eating them, that used to be, like, one of my favorite things to put in a, you know, to make a smoked fish dip with, is some fresh-caught smoked Spanish mackerel.
Oh, yeah, man, that's good stuff. Real quick, going to the phones, 321-306, who do I have on the phone? Whoa. Somebody bowling, it sounds like. Yeah, we'll just go ahead and leave them on hold. Wow, that was pretty loud. Mr. Becker, oh wait, real quick, Rob's from over in Clearwater, folks, for those of you that don't know, and he's the host of our Tuesday night show. Mr. Becker.
Sir.
Sir. Have you targeted Spanish mackerel?
I have not. I had one hit from a Spanish mackerel when I was out tarpon fishing off of Indian Rocks Beach in Tampa Bay, and zipped the bait about 30 feet and 3/10 of a second before coming unbuttoned. Got a quick look at it, but had not targeted, haven't been out in that section of the water, get out there yet, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm seeing some reports that... that the Kings are in as well, and there's still a bunch of Spanish being caught in the middle of them, so should be fun.
Yes, sir. Let me see. Well, I'll tell you what, man, a really cool trick. One of my favorite ways to catch Spanish mackerel is live baiting them. I like to use finger mullet and freeline them just because I'm cruel and I like to watch a finger mullet swim away for his life while 6 or 7 Spanish mackerel try and chase him down. But if you're standing on a jetty... Yeah, I know it's wrong. But if you're standing on a jetty and you can almost hear the little mullet scream while they're trying to get out of the water, it's whatever. So
that is wrong on so many different levels.
I know. My show's not very PC tonight. But if you're standing on a jetty or if you're out on a boat and you see Spanish mackerel crashing through bait and stuff and you're trying to get them to kind of tune into what you're throwing – a really cool trick I learned from an old-timer, I know I've spoken about it a couple times on other shows, is the old McDonald's straw trick, or Burger King, it doesn't matter, it's a straw trick, where you go to your favorite fast food establishment, pick up a handful of drinking straws, and cut small pieces of those in about maybe 4 to 6 inch sections, slip those down like a 50-pound monofilament leader down to like a number 4 treble hook. Throw it out with a clear bobber if you can find those clear bobbers. They used to sell them a lot at Walmart. Not very many places carry them, but Walmart seems in Bass Pro Shops. But throw those things out as far away from you as you can get them and just rip them across the surface and like chug them almost like a popping cork. The idea of using the clear bobber versus a normal popping cork is Spanish mackerel will try and eat your popping cork and then you'll be less one popping cork. So... they can't really see that clear bobber, so it's not something for them to try and strike. But yet, give them enough time, they'll come up behind that little piece of straw and they'll gobble it up. I've watched guys catch limits of mangrove snappers. I mean, not mangrove snappers. What am I talking about? Limits of Spanish mackerel. I'm thinking about snappers. I'm hungry. In like 15 casts, I guess the limit over here is 15 fish. And I've watched guys catch 15 Spanish and 15 casts with the bobber and the straw trick. And it doesn't cost you hardly anything at all but a pack of treble hooks, some leader material, and a bobber. So That's a pretty cool way to target them. I do love to eat them. It's one of my favorite eating fish. I prefer to cook them on the grill or cook them in the oven. A couple different ways I do it. I'll write a little recipe for that and post it up on yakangler.com. Your ultimate kayak fishing resource for all things kayak fishing related. Check it out, yakangler.com. But real quick, one easy way to do it is just take a tin foil, make a boat, take a couple fresh fillets, make sure you cut the red meat out of them, lay your fillets down, drizzle a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, some green bell pepper, some onion, and maybe just a smidge of zesty Italian dressing. Roll the thing up, put it on the grill, like a medium-high heat, on the top rack for about 5 minutes, and it's good. And you are golden. That on top of a big bed of rice, and now we're talking. So that's my recipe. I'm going to go back to the phones real quick. I got an 863 number calling me.
That's Haywood.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
What's going on?
A whole lot of nothing, man. We're talking Spanish mackerel. Do you tend to target any Spanish over by you?
You know, not so much the Spanish. We'll go out for the kings, and we'll troll big plugs up and down the beach for them. Yeah, it's probably a little bit more work, but it's just, it's just like the way we do it. So,
yeah, that's cool. I found that a lot of times whenever I'm catching a lot of Spanish mackerel, every once in a while you'll pull up a baby kingfish, and you can definitely tell the difference between the two. But it's just kind of funny. You'll be sitting there catching 15 to like 22-inch Spanish mackerel, and all of a sudden you pull up a 22-inch kingfish, and you're looking at it like, where's your spots? You don't have any spots. You're the wrong breed. But so it's a lot of fun. And this time of year is the time to do it. We still have the mullet run going on offshore Port Canaveral. Up and down the beach up towards Playlinda, which is just north of Port Canaveral, down around Sebastian. I know there's some mullet that are cruising around. So it's really, really exciting. There are a ton of bluefish that are following these same mullet pods. So I think it was Mark Lozier earlier in the chat room had said, if you're catching bluefish, you're reeling too slow. So that's pretty true. Bless you. But no problem. But it's a lot of fun, man. It's something you can get the kids involved in. Spanish mackerel will fight really hard. Again, the typical size of them is somewhere between 12 to maybe 18 inches, but you'll get them over that for sure, all the way up to about 4 or 5 pounds. 5 pounds being a big one for our area. Of course, the gotcha plugs and the Clark spoons and the Met spoons and Little Rapala's lip plugs and Yuzuri lip plugs and stuff like that have all worked very well for them. So a lot of different ways to target them. They're easy fish to find. Just look for the birds diving on bait, or look for the millions of mullet running for their lives trying to get out of the water so they don't get eaten. All up and down the beach. I'm actually going to try and target them this year on fly. I haven't done that yet. And I know I've got a couple of flies I've tied up, just some don't look like much, just some streamers that I'm going to do a little trace of, say, like number two or number four wire and, something really thin so that I don't have to worry about break-offs and stuff. But it should be a good time.
You know, Chuck, you can use that straw trick fly fishing too, minus the bottom.
Yeah, well, and I thought about that. What in the world? All right. I got somebody in the chat typing a bunch of nonsense. I don't know what in the world is going on, but cool, we'll go with it. We got that 321 area code again. Let's see if he's still bowling. 360.
What's going on, Chuck?
Who's this?
It's Joe Earlham. Joe Earlham.
Oh, what's up, buddy?
Sorry. I was just calling you to say, hey, what's up going on? I always miss you.
No, that's cool, man. I appreciate it. It's not like you were bowling earlier.
Yeah, I got a league over here. That's why it's hard for me to get over there on the phones and stuff. And you're talking about redfish and trout and everything else, but I just stopped in to say hi. That's all.
Cool, man. I appreciate it.
And I'll get time out over the house, and I got to bring you those reels too, those my Shimano's and stuff like that right there to get them worked out.
Yeah, man. Bring the reels on. We'll take them over to Handler Fish and Supply located in Port Canaveral. It should be your favorite fishing store. Not yours per se, sir, because I know your situation, but for anybody listening in the show, that's where I work. That's my 9 to 5. And speaking of Handler Fishing Supply, we have our second annual Shimano product showcase coming up this upcoming Saturday. We'll have our local Shimano rep will be on hand to answer any of your questions of any of the new products. And
Chuck, you got to kick Chuck. Sorry to bother you, man, but you got to kick that guy out of the chat room.
Yeah. Okay. How do
Chuck,
I
mean, get going, buddy?
All right, buddy.
Oh, okay. Good.
I'll swing by your house, or I'll drop off the reels, or I'll swing by the shop. You know, I'm working over there, so I got too many hours. I'm putting it over there. So.
Cool.
But it's an uphill battle. But I'll give you a shout, though.
Yeah, man. Give me a call.
All right, guys. Good show. Bye.
See you, bud. I figured it out. I apologize for the nonsense that was going on in the. Is he back? No, I think I got rid of him.
Doesn't appear to be.
All right, my bad. I don't know what all he was saying, but I would try not to pay too much attention. Anyhow, so enough about that. Yeah, back to the sale. I got to plug that real fast. Sorry about that, guys. So Shimano Product Showcase will have deals on everything in the shop pretty much. Costa Del Mar sunglasses, while we don't discount them, we give you added value. And if any of you guys want to call the shop and place an order for anything, you know, I'll be more than happy to get you out your free products. And that includes a shirt, a Costa Del Mar visor, and a pair of Costa Del Mar lanyards with every Costa Del Mar purchase. There you go. So that's this Saturday. But anyway, back to Spanish mackerel. So, yeah, they're awesome, man. I really like to catch them. They're fun. And there's just so many different ways to target them. And I know that a lot of guys here in Florida and apparently all the way up the coast do as well. So, good deal. That's the happening.
Chuck, don't forget the Bonita either. That's actually what I try to go out and target in between the runs of trying to find the king mackerel is the Bonita.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. The thing about our area is every now and again we'll get those Bonita, the big Bonita schools to push in relatively close to the beach. This time of year, I haven't seen or heard of very many of them being around. I think Steve Chapman's about to educate me a little bit on that. But, you know, it's one of those things that is definitely probably one of the the strongest pound-for-pound fighting fish that you're going to find on the inshore side of,
yeah.
of the ocean, and they're a blast on all tackle. And
yep.
I, you know what, man? I actually know people that eat the things. I don't personally eat them, but I know people that have. And, hey, you know, they like them. So, but, yeah, it's – and, again, same kind of thing. If you're out there paddling around off the beach, we've had a couple of decent days so far this fall where you can get out and you see those birds working the surface and you see small either glass minnows or you see mullet getting crashed, definitely paddle over here and throw anything at all in the water and move it fast. And bonitos will eat it, the Spanish will eat it, the blues will eat it, the big Jack Crevels will eat it. And there's still some tarpon holding off our beach over here too, some big ones. But let's see. Oh, okay. Steve Chapman wants to know what to look for when ditch fishing. All right, here we go. Ditch fishing 101. Since we are about to have some severe weather coming through in the next couple of days, the next day or two, it's very, very easy to find ditch tarpon, ditch snook, ditch trout, all that kind of thing. All you need to do is find moving water and your best friend in the whole world, Google Earth. Take a second to pull up Google Earth, scroll through whatever area you think you want to go fish, find yourself a spot that looks like it's going to pour out into the intercoastal, but has some, you know, a decent amount of water that moves back up into the shoreline. Because what you're looking for is you're looking for that moving water. You know, as soon as that water starts to flow, all the small bait fish, the small baby mullet, little grass shrimp, mud minnows, that kind of thing, all get swept out of their normal haunts, which is up in the marsh, out into the intercoastal, and then it's just game on. That is part of how you find those little tarpons and stuff. The other half of it is when the water comes up, it allows those fish to move further and further up into those canals and those ditches and get to wherever it is they're supposed to go to grow or to do their spawn or whatever it is that they're trying to get to. So first thing I do is I'll drive a couple dike roads or ditch areas and keep my eyes peeled on the water. You know, drive maybe 100 yards or so and stop and just take a good 5 to 10 minutes to really look over the water and watch for anything moving. I mean, you gotta. Sometimes it's nothing more than just a little tiny flick like a mullet would do, just kicking its tail or, you know. And then other times it's blatantly obvious. You'll see a 10-pound tarpon just roll, you know. And if you can't pick out what that is, then watch longer. Watch the ditches longer and wait until somebody catches one, and then you understand what's going on. Most of the tarpon that I've been finding, as you guys have seen most of my posts on Facebook, have been small fish, anywhere from, well, the smallest being 3 inches, all the way up to 10 pounds. So, but I've seen some the last few days that have been much, much bigger. I've seen some that have been in the 20 to 30 pound range, and I watched one roll today in a spot that you never would have guessed there'd be one that big that must have been pushing 50 pounds. So, you know, you never know. I always bring two rods with me. I bring a 5-weight with me, and I bring a 8-weight with me, just in case the bigger ones are there. But the flies that have been working or the baits that have been working, honestly, have been crappie jigs if you're going to use spin tackle, small little, like, speck grub tails, because all these fish are feeding on little tiny, like, mosquito fish and little grass shrimp and that kind of thing. So if you're out there trying to catch a ditch tarpon on a Yuzuri plug or a Rapala or something like that, you might as well, you know, just not waste your time. Just try and remember these fish are in there for a reason, and they're in there to feed, and what they're feeding on is these small little baits. So consequently, I've had to tie a lot of really small flies. The little tiny 3-inch tarpon that I caught the other day, I actually caught him on a number 14 hook, like a rainbow trout hook. Greg Becker, you'd know about that.
Yes, I would.
But it works, you know, because it mimics the size of the forage that they're eating. I found that I can eliminate those really, really small fish, but still catch small enough fish by tying flies on a number 4. Actually, owner mosquito hook has been my hook of choice as of late. And I'm tying a lot of patterns with marabou. So if you guys tie it all, that might be something to try and remember is using marabou. So the marabou with like some crystal flash, but real small, just the tips of the marabou feathers, because the marabou has a lot of life. So it's a great fly or a great material to tie into your fly. Bait fish patterns, shrimp patterns, it works for everything. And then you can – welcome back, Mr. Becker. Then you can use monofilament eyes as opposed to bead chain eyes or lead eyes, because you really want that fly to be somewhat neutrally buoyant. You want it to kind of hang up there near the surface, maybe drop down the deepest, maybe about a foot or so. There's some areas from Titusville all the way down through Melbourne into Sebastian Inlet area that hold these fish. There's a lot of ditches and canals and waterways that'll hold these fish, like Ula May area. The Ula May area of Merritt Island holds these fish pretty well. The north end of Merritt Island holds the fish pretty well. Titusville up around the Mosquito Lagoon, the Biolab Road area, when it's not closed, for those of you that fish that area, apparently Biolab Road is going to be closed for about a month. So, you know, whatever. Where else? Let's see. Turnbull Creek, all the way up the very north end of the Indian River Lagoon, tends to hold some of these fish. And that includes redfish and trout as well, and ladyfish and that kind of thing. So you have a bit of a variety swimming through these canals. And I've caught just about everything that's in these canals on fly ever since our epic rain event of 2 weeks ago. So I'm looking forward to the rain coming again to help push some more water around. I know it's not conducive for kayak fishing, but you know what? Honestly, the conditions in the intercoastal right now are not really conducive for sight fishing. And that's kind of my thing. And while I can't do that, I'll go ditch fishing. So I know my show has kind of become ditch fishing 101, it seems, as the last couple of weeks. But trust me, just hang in there with me. Another couple of weeks, we'll get that water cleaned up and I'll be back at it again. But so yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. It's exciting because you really never know what you're going to catch on the fly rod or even on the light spinner rod because, again, everything travels these ditches. Some of the fish that I've run into have been snook and again, redfish and trout. In fact, if any of you guys had saw the pictures on my Facebook of the snook that I caught this past weekend, those were caught in ponds, literally ponds that are connected to each other by culvert pipes. And yeah, crazy. I mean, I knew they were in there. I've caught them there before, but still, every time you pull one out of a pond, it's still kind of like, you know, boggles your mind. You're like, you're lost. What are you doing here? But so, Mr. Becker, I know that you're a fly fisherman at heart. That's, I'm sure over in the West Coast there, you guys have got some mosquito control areas, if not some sort of residential ditches and canals and stuff that might feed into the bay or your areas. Have you ever walked any of those dike roads or anything?
I haven't. I've been concentrating on the big water out in the bays until I got exposed to the concept of ditch fishing. And now that I see another angle out there, my son and I were actually just talking about it tonight, that we're going to start taking a look around to some of the areas and see what's around here on the West Coast. We've got a road called 41 that runs up the coast, and there are a bunch of ditches that run back from the main bay back in there. Some of them actually have names, some of them don't. But I can't imagine that they're going to be too much different from the stuff that you have over there. So we're going to start taking some walks and see what we can find.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, like I said. And what else is cool about it, and being now that I'm fly tying a lot more, the experimentation of trying to figure out what I can tie to make these fish bite, you know, has been really, really cool. And I think I've pretty much got them dialed in with a marabou and a bait fish pattern kind of deal, just because it has so much, it's got so much movement in the water. It's I don't know. If you've never seen that feather in the water, it's the craziest thing you'll ever see. You'd swear that the fly is alive. And apparently the tarpon think it is, because I get more strikes when I stop stripping, when it just kind of undulates in the water, than I do when I'm actually stripping the fly. So I think that little extra kick, that little extra movement, really tend to fire them up and get them going. Now, excuse me, down to the south of me, down around Sebastian, we've got the Sebastian River and Turkey Creek area, and there's some big tarpon in there. There's some 80-pounders and bigger that move up into those areas. And, I mean, I wouldn't mess with those things with an 8-weight. I got a 12-weight for that, but still, I couldn't imagine that this rain would hurt that bite. I would imagine it would do nothing but help it. Haywood, do you ever fish from shore, like ditches, or, I mean, have you ever ditch fished, or?
No, it's not the same here as it is over on that coast, Chuck. Most of our fish like that you will catch up in small creeks and backwater bays or ponds that are really, really not accessible from the road. There are a few mosquito ditches like that, but they're so overgrown now that you can't get into them. You can't fish them. So most of our fish are caught, at least on this side of the bay, are caught more up into little creeks that dump out onto the flats. You can take those back up if you're brave enough. I've had the park just down from my house here is loaded with wild pigs. And in the wintertime, you can go in there, and those little creeks will have deep cuts under the mangroves, and the snook will be stacked up in there because they can't get out. There's no water for them to get out on the flats. And you can go in there and just, you know, have a field day with them. But you have to watch your back because, you know, I've turned around and walked out of the creek only to come out and find a freaking 250-pound pig standing next to my kayak. So,
Wilbur.
Yeah,
Wilbur
eating your lunch.
Is exactly right.
That's funny. I'll tell you a real quick pig story. Just north of Beacon 42 boat ramp in the Mosquito Lagoon on the west side of the shoreline, which is located inside what we call the Clinker Islands. There's a big, big family of pigs that roam that area back in there. And in the wintertime, they come out all the time. As soon as the sun starts coming up and starts to heat up that shoreline, they all come wandering out, goofy looking and all. And the piglets run along the shoreline, and the adults will actually wade out into the lagoon. I've seen them as deep as their shoulders, almost completely underwater, rooting around on the bottom of the Mosquito Lagoon for whatever they're eating, clams or whatever they're trying to get. But, yeah, it's definitely a sight to behold when you either launching in the morning or recovering your kayak in the afternoon, and there's six or seven of them standing in the middle of the parking lot just, like, looking at you like, what are you doing here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one creature, man, I try not to mess with unless I got a 270 short mag in my hand. Cool. So yeah, that's kind of my thing. I mean, with the ditch fishing thing, like today, for instance, I went out and I hit a couple of spots. I was trying to do some film, and, I mentioned earlier that the BioLab area, the BioLab boat ramp in the Mosquito Lagoon, the actual dike road that runs, south from the boat ramp is closed apparently for at least a month, from what I was told from the guy over at the Playland Beach Access, which kind of surprised me because I was out there just the other day and there didn't seem to be anything wrong with the roadway. It's not like it got washed out with all the rain that we had. And I had been on an outstanding tarpon bite up in that area. And I was kind of shocked to come across a gate that said, stop, you know, we're not open for business, basically. So I had a backtrack. I drove another 30 minutes to the south, and hit some of those spots I've been hitting in Merritt Island and down there towards Cocoa Beach, and got one little tarpon this morning. Not too bad, but man, I had strike after strike after strike after strike, and I just couldn't get a hook set. And again, I think it had a lot to do with when I saw a bigger one roll, I dropped that 5-weight down. I grabbed that 8-weight, 9-weight, I mean the 8-weight, and start throwing the bigger fly, and you know, I wouldn't get the big fish to roll on it, I just get the little fish to try and eat it, and that hook was just too big for them. And then vice versa, you know, I'd see nothing but the little ones going, so I pick up the little one and then a big one would roll on the little fly, and it just, you know, it's pretty hard to set a hook, a number 14 size hook into a, you know, 10 pound tarpon's jaw. It tends to bend straight. There's really no easy way to do that. But anyhow, but what I was looking for is I was looking for those fish moving. I was looking for them rolling. I was looking for them doing their thing. And, you know, I don't know. I struck out the first two places I went to. I saw one or two small flips. And if any of you guys have ever fished offshore or just along the beaches and been in the middle of schools of pilchards or pogies or menhaden, and you see the way they look like when they flip on the surface, it's just basically their tail kicking a little bit of water up in the air. That's exactly what these little tarpon look like when they're rolling, because they're so small. A 12-inch tarpon doesn't have, I mean, when he rolls, he's rolling at like Mach 57 speed, where you don't get to see his little body kind of get up and roll. It's more just a little flip of water. So, but once I did locate those fish, then I was able to target them a little bit better. But that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't know how else you can really locate them. If you know of some places that got culverts are great spots to fish. If the water's not moving out of the culvert super quick, if it's just kind of trickling out of the culvert, but the culvert's completely submerged, don't be scared to try and lay a fly right up into the culvert. Or if the water's going, if you can stand on the other side where the water goes through, hold on one second. How far north can you find that, Chuck? Oh, the tarpon, not much further north than where I'm at. You can get them probably, I'd say, up into the Volusia County area, the southern part of Volusia County, and that would probably be about the cutoff that I would know of. But then again, I haven't done a whole lot of fishing up towards, like, say, Jacksonville and St. Augustine and stuff. So, but I would imagine those fish not going that far north, especially this time of year. Springtime, maybe you'd find them up there as thick as I got them down here. But right now, I think that it's mainly going to be down this way. But so anyway, if you can stand on the opposite side of the culvert, don't be scared to let your fly roll through the culvert. You know, let the current kind of pull your fly down in there. And even if you hook one and he's inside that culvert pipe, I mean, every now and again you feel bad because you hear him jump and thump his head, but you can get him out of there pretty quick. And, you know, that's where they're laying. They're sitting in the current. They're lazy fish. You know, a 3-inch tarpon is just as lazy as a 150-pound tarpon can be. So that's why they hang out in marinas and eat fish scraps. I mean, they're just like anything else. They're a opportunistic feeder. So there you go. I hope that answered your question, Steve. That's kind of it's such a broad deal. But let's see, ditches for other species. Well, yeah, you Mark Lozier up there. You should be able to find some backwater waterways up there, some ditches, some canals and stuff, and those areas will have plenty of redfish and black drum in them. You should be able to maybe even find some flounder mixed up in there. It's real tidal driven up by you where you're staying, so those fish can kind of come and go with the tide. When the tide rolls in, then those fish can kind of move back up in there and feed where they normally wouldn't be able to eat and gorge themselves on fiddler crabs and small mud minnows and that kind of thing. So I know when I was up in the Amelia Island area, which is North Florida, I was actually really surprised and kind of ticked off too that I didn't have a fishing pole. But I'm looking at redfish tailing along the sawgrass as the tide's coming up, you know, pushing up and like swimming through the grass to feed on fiddler crabs and stuff that were climbing up the grass chutes. So you should be able to do pretty good up there. But what you really need to do, Mark, is figure out a day where you can drive down here, and I'll be more than happy to take you fishing, and whether it's ditch fishing, kayak fishing, whatever you want to do. So, but there you go, Mr. Becker. I hope that you find ditch fishing to be quite as fun as I have.
I'm sure I will. I just need to, part of my challenge is finding the right flies too. So I'm working on that as well. But I'm sure once I find some, I will have great success.
Yeah, I just so happen to know of somebody who's got 6 flies set aside that I tied last night, especially for you. So you got about a dozen and a half that I've got set aside for you. You keep saying you're gonna come over here and I can hand deliver them to you, but I think I just need to ship them to you. So here you have them. But those little rattling shrimp work real well. I don't know if you tie any rattling shrimp, that kind of pattern works pretty good too. When the water's a little murky and you can't really see too well, that little tick works real well too. So,
yep, they're great.
Yeah, I love rattling shrimp. The put that marabou with polar fiber material, and the polar fiber material, not polar fiber material. Sorry, the what's it called? Wow, awesome. I use it all the time, and I can't think of it right now. Total brain fart.
E-fiber?
No, it's streamer brush. That's what it is.
Yep.
Streamer brush. I get the streamer brush from just at H2O. I've been using a lot of white. I used white. I've used shrimp color. I've used the camel. I've used the golden brown, or I think it's golden. Yeah, golden brown. And also camo. and all of those colors matched with the a marabou tail that is of the same color-ish, if you can. Just, you know, tie in your marabou at the end, tie in your streamer brush, wrap it around your hook a couple of good times, tie it off, throw a set of mono eyes on it, and call it good. It's really easy to tie in. It's really effective. So,
have you ever done much with either Arctic Fox or with Zonker strips?
Oh, yeah. I'll tie Zonker strips. I'll tie a Zonker tail and then tie that streamer brush into a head as well. In fact, there's a pretty cool way of doing it's a pretty cool way of building a head with the streamer brush with epoxy, and it almost acts as a plow. It really pushes a lot of water when you strip it, and when you stop stripping, let the fly pause for a second, that Zonker strip really has a lot of life and kind of paddles a few times, almost like a paddle tail bait, kind of sways back and forth in the water a little bit, and drives those fish crazy. And that head will actually trap some air in it, so it'll kind of give it this neutral buoyancy kind of thing. So it'll sink a couple inches below the surface and just kind of like hang there. And that's like ideal, you know?
Arctic Fox will do the same type of thing. It'll have the same action as marabou, but it's a lot more buoyant. So if you know, marabou is good for the muddler minnows style flies or anything that you want to get down on the water column. If you want something that's going to stay up, try Arctic Fox sometime. It'll trap a lot more air, and you get the same type of action that you really like out of the marabou.
Oh, sweet. Cool. Appreciate that. I actually have some here at the house, and I tried to work with it once before, using it almost like craft fur for tails or for like shrimp bodies.
Yep.
And it does have a lot of life to it. You're right. I'm just not, I don't know, my digits don't really allow me to work with that material for some reason. I have a hard time keeping it together. That's why I like the streamer brush so much, because it's on a piece of wire. You know, I mean, there's nothing really to mess up with that. You just tie it in, wrap it around, tie it in, cut it off.
But, a tip for that, if you're working with it, if you're working with Arctic Fox, get right down to the hide. Take a drop of your head cement or whatever else. Take a bunch, roll it between your fingers, and put the drop of cement right down at the base before you cut it. Let it dry, cut through the cement, then you bring up little chunks. You can do whatever you want with it. That is one of the issues with working with Arctic Fox or another really fine fur like that, is that it tends to fray in the bunch or in the brush that you're trying to tie, and it tends to want to get away from itself because it doesn't really stick together at all. But if you put a little dot of glue or whatever else, or you know, if you've used crazy glue, I've used head cement, whatever, right down at the base, and then cut through that glue to bring it up, you have your own little glued bunch that you can put together.
Oh, sweet. Oh, I appreciate that, man. Good tip. Because I like to use as many natural materials as I can. I don't like too many synthetics. They just don't seem to breathe, as I like to call them, as the natural stuff does. I've tried to use polar fiber to make polar fiber minnows, and I know it's such an easy bait fish pattern to tie, man, but for whatever reason, I either tie too much in or not enough in, or tie it too far back and it just doesn't look right, or when I go to trim it, I destroy it, and it's like I got probably four or five bundles of each individual color that's just sitting in a shoebox because I refuse to try and use it again. But, the fly thing, you can even use flies on your spinning tackle when you're doing this because you're not casting. I mean, you're ditch fishing. The ditches most of the time are much wider than, say, 10, 15 feet. So if you've got bead chain eyes on it, you can do the same thing. Let me see what Steve Chapman's saying here in the chat room. Good show. Yeah, for sure. Appreciate it, buddy. I want to join the show. I want to come on and sit in with you guys. It sounds like you guys have too much fun in the morning. And picking on Boudreaux sounds like a good time. So I'll definitely have to get a hold of you. And that's Steve Chapman from Fishing Florida Radio. That is on 740 The Game here in Central Florida. Actually, all over Florida on the AM channel. So appreciate it, Steve. Thanks for stopping in, buddy. Who else I got in the chat room? Oh, I got everybody. I got the Hammerhead. I got Mark Lozier. Aaron's in there. What's going on, buddy? Landon Crew, of course, is on the phone. Greg Becker. Cool. A bunch of guests. Appreciate you guys hanging in there with me. and listening to the Ditch Fishing / Spanish Mackerel Marathon. So yeah, anybody on the in the chat room have any questions or want to join in on the conversation, please feel free, or just listening in. The number is 714-816-4727. Yeah, call in. If you have anything to say or add or want to talk about something different, that's cool too. I know sometimes I go off on tangents and I can run off at the mouth, but you know, please feel free to interrupt me. But Rob, are you planning on trying to do any fishing after this rain or during
the
rain?
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to see how it's gonna pan out this weekend with the weather and everything. See how this low pressure system, Invest 95 or whatever you want to call it, and it all depends on what that's doing. So we'll see.
Cool.
It's a little bit early in the week to have everything nailed down anyway.
Right. Mark, you were telling me earlier on when we were talking prior to the show coming on that you guys have been dealing with some water temperature changes.
Yeah, it's mostly because of the wind right now here in the bay. A couple days it'll blow out of the northeast, so it'll blow some of that cooler water in. And then the water coming out of the Susquehanna and northern, when the wind will shift out of the northwest, it'll push some of that warmer water through, or we'll get a southerly wind. This is the time of year where the temps will kind of ride up and down a little bit at the mouth of the bay. Farther in, it's not a big problem because it's usually the same temp. Right here at the mouth, it's kind of keeping things on limbo. So hopefully, you know, the big drum bite that Kevin's been on and everyone else has been on, you know, is going to stay rolling for another week or two, hopefully. Yeah, as soon as the winds and the temps up north start really coming down a little bit more, it'll bring the rest of the temps down with it. And hopefully once those temps start dropping, we're looking for like, you know, 59 degrees water temp is when, you know, we should start making the pilgrimage across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel to Skip the Peak and really turn into the big stripers. Actually, my temp that I start heading across is about 56 is when I'll make the pilgrimage across.
Wow.
And that water temp's right, you know, that I have to have that water temp for, you know, 2 or 3 days. I like to see that temp start on like a Tuesday or Wednesday and just hold steady until, you know, Friday or Saturday so I can get out there and spend all night and tear them up.
Sweet. Man, that's cool. That's cold water, man. I don't know about cool water. That's cold water compared to what we're dealing with here. But, man, I can't wait for that cool water to hit us, man, because that algae bloom that we're suffering with over here in the Indian River and Banana River and Mosquito Lagoon area is horrible still. And I guess it doesn't help that we got all that water flowing into the reservoirs from all the backwater stuff, bringing all that soot and stuff in there. But I don't know. Eventually that water will clean right up again, and we'll be able to see the schools of hundreds of redfish cruising up and down the banks once again in the Mosquito Lagoon and the rivers and stuff. But that's awesome, man. God, I got to make a trip up there someday to fish with you. I want to go up there and catch a striper out of the kayak so bad I can't stand it.
Well, come on, man.
Yeah. Trust me. As soon as God's willing or the wife will give me a kitchen pass, I'm on the way. Let's see. Greg Becker, I know you were talking about ditch fishing. Are you going to try and do some ditch fishing after this rain?
It depends. We're scheduled to be up in on a trip this weekend, a camping / kayak fishing trip up into the Big Bend of Florida. But we're going to go up and target Junior Fly Reel and I. We're going up with Haywood and Tree Hunter and his clone to see if we could find some big uglies and some redfish, some big black drum. But looking at windfinder.com, it's looking like the winds are going to be howling right out of the north up there. And from what my local expert is telling me, that's not a good time to fish up there. It's basically going to be unfishable with winds anything over 10 miles an hour out of the north. So we're Junior Fly Reel and I are right now having the conversation about what our alternate plans for the weekend might be.
Yeah, well, we'll be praying to the weather gods that they're kind to you guys. Pour them a beer.
At the weather gods.
What's that?
Not the weather gods. It's Slappy Jack.
Slappy Jack.
Slappy
That's right.
Jack. Slappy Jack is the wind god. He's a distant cousin to Jobu, and he spent his early days as a pirate. So he knows the ways to conjure the wind up and down, and that's you'll see a little bit more about Slappy Jack this week. So.
No, it's a good thing. It's a very good thing. And right now, it's all
God.
We got.
Slappy Jack.
Listen, don't laugh at Slappy Jack now. Come on. It's not good.
That is awesome.
Don't think it's rum.
Slappy Jack's my boy. That's funny.
Very bad to take Slappy Jack's rum, too.
Yeah.
Hey, Chuck.
Yeah, bud.
Hey, in January and February, we have what's, you know, this will be heaven for you, man. We have what's called the hot ditch, and it's a ditch coming from a power plant.
Mm.
So the waters are always 70 degrees. You get out there and you paddle, you launch and you paddle it in, 40-degree water, and then you can stick your hand in the water and go from 40 to 70. And it's just, that's nice and warm. And you paddle through, and it's a ditch. It's about 30, maybe 40 feet across, so you can get the kayak in there. And it's just trout and reds, stripers, and everything sits in there if they can't get out in time. And it's like, taking candy from a baby, man.
Nice.
It's stacked in there. And it's good cover. It's just great.
Greg Becker, thank you very much for joining us again. I appreciate you not being so ninja-like tonight.
I was saving it.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it, buddy. Thanks again. That's awesome, Mark. Yeah, it's cool. We've got two power plants right here that I live about 15 minutes from, and one of them just went under, just went through a complete overhaul. He went from oil to a natural gas power plant. So that one has been kind of decommissioned for a little bit. But the other one is up and running. In the wintertime, I have caught literally the slam to end all slams behind that place. And I'm talking redfish, black drum, snook, tarpon, mangrove snapper, ladyfish, jack crevalle, flounder, pompano. What else have I got? Sheephead, spadefish. All in a day.
Wow.
Sitting right behind the power plant. There's two discharges for this particular power plant. The discharge that was to the north side of the power plant had a real deep hole that was next to the blowout, and it was lined with rock. And the mangrove snappers would get down in there, so would the sheephead and the spadefish, and the fish that tend to hang out near the structure quite a bit more. And so if you wanted to target them, you just throw shrimp in there. Or you can fish a small finger mullet for the mangrove snappers or whatever. And then in the actual discharge, the actual the flow coming out of the plant, the 100-plus pound tarpon all the way down to 15 and 20-pound tarpon would be sitting in there just rolling all day long. And if you can get a bait past them, the snook would be hanging below them, and the redfish would be down there as well. The black drum would be hanging out there. So it was a really cool place to fish. I'm hoping that when they get this new one up and running and they start doing their cool down discharges, that it's going to be the same way. Haywood, thanks again, man. Appreciate you coming on and sticking with us and throwing in some great info, man. Appreciate it. But power plants. That's actually a really good topic to talk about probably next show, since we're still coming into some cooler weather. We're supposed to get down to a low for the year so far the next few days. So, there we go. Awesome. Well, guys, I really appreciate you hanging in. We've reached our 9 o'clock hour, and I have to be up super early in the morning to open up Handler Fishing Supply, so I'm going to call it an evening. Thanks again to everybody that joins us live, listens to the podcast. If you know someone that might be interested in the show, please let them know about the podcast. I got a bunch of my local buddies that can't catch the show live, so they you download that podcast. Everybody in the chat room, Rob, Greg Becker, all the guests, Hammerhead, thanks again, buddy, Mark Lozier, Aaron, everybody. Just, you know, like I say, let me know if there's any questions you may have about fishing my area or ditch fishing or fly tying, or if you want me to. I'm going to start doing some videos, demonstration videos on tying some of these flies I've been tying for these tarpon now that I got a really good video camera to work with. So look for that to happen. I'll be posting those up on yakangler.com, your ultimate kayak fishing resource. Again, check out the Fish Skins Tournament. Check out Handler Fishing Supply. We have our Shimano Product Showcase 2-year anniversary sale, the 22nd, this upcoming Saturday. Yeah, I think that's about it. Check out Rob's blog, badbadcast.com.
You're listening to Kaya.
Don't do that.
I don't know what that was. And then check out
my blog has been non-existent lately, so apologizing in advance for that.
Oh, well, for those who haven't caught up on everything going on in Rob's bad backcast life, that's fine. You know, if you haven't read any of the recent stuff that he hasn't posted, that's why. But check out Rob's show tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern. Mark, he's got a show on Wednesday, 8 o'clock Eastern. Then we have the Godfather, Chip. He's got his show Thursday night, 8 o'clock Eastern. And Friday is the...
Go.
Somebody just scored. Who scored?
Jets. Revis, 100 yard interception return.
There you go. Go, go, go. But the Godfather's got his show on Thursday, and then we've got the... what are we calling it again?
Spike and Ike.
The Spike and Ike
Spike and Ike.
That's right, Spike and Ike show on Friday night, 8 o'clock Eastern. Out of California. So if you want to get a hold of me, you can hit me in the email. It's chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com, or friend me on Facebook. If we're not friends on Facebook, be my friend. I want to be your friend. And that's all I got. So
it's a tag.
Yeah. What's that?
It's a tag.
Oh, let's see real quick while we're still on what the tag is. I'm trying to find it here. Is it all the way down at the bottom?
You can outro that, yeah.
Let's see. All right.
It's probably under K.
I got it. We're going to go out with the new tag, apparently. Not my normal music, but we'll listen to what Rob's put together. Something interesting. Trey and Logan, sleep through the night. Daddy's got to get up early. Talk to you guys next week. Thanks again.
You're listening to Kayak Fishing Radio.